The Kings are on the air. This is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Zierlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
All right, Lance Zierlein here with you, and we've got a very busy show. Joining us right now, as promised, is former Astros first pick of the draft, 1.1 in 2013, Mark Appel. And there's a lot to talk about with Mark, primarily minor league stuff that he brought to light on a really interesting and informative Twitter string. But, you know, here in Houston, Mark, we're kind of, you obviously, for Astros fans, we knew all about when you were drafted in 2013. Some people don't know, you were actually drafted in 2009 by Detroit. You went to Stanford. You got drafted again, eighth overall in the first round in 2012 by the Pirates. Before going back to Stanford and then coming back, you were the first pick of the Astros in 2013. It didn't end up working out for you with the Astros organization. You were traded to Philadelphia. You're out of baseball now. Before we get into some of the stuff that you tweeted about, I'm just curious to get your take, because we've never had a chance to talk to you. What happened with the Astros and the minor league system? What do you, when you look back and reflect, what are some things that you take away from your minor league experience? Not from your living conditions just yet, but from your Astros, you know, your time with the Astros, for example, and trying to make it to the big club.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I take away is honestly just the friendships that I was able to make. You know, a lot of the guys that have become, you know, the new wave of Astros greats were and are good friends of mine as we were coming up through the minors together. Like you said, you know, it didn't work out between me and the Astros, and they traded me to Philadelphia, which, you know, is a common thing in the business of baseball. But, yeah, I have a lot of really fond memories from my time in Houston.
What did you work with Brent Strom at all at any point in the minors? Was Brent, I'm trying to remember if Stromy was ever in the minors.
You know, Stromy wasn't in the minors, but he definitely still spent time and invested in some of the guys, you know, that I think he believed in and he saw a future with. And so, you know, and that was mainly in spring training. And sometimes he would check in throughout the season, see how guys like myself or Lance McCullers or others were doing, and just offering help. I mean, he's one of the best in the game. And obviously his track record proves it.
You know, the Astros are kind of ahead of the game in terms of, or at least they're considered to be one of the teams that really have paid an unbelievable amount of attention to spin rate, things like that. When you were in the minor league system with the Astros, what was it like from a technology standpoint and in terms of how different was it from when you had pitched, let's say, just in college at Stanford? What were they doing from a technology standpoint? Did you see anything that you thought was really eye-opening for you?
Yeah, they were definitely on the forefront of trying to, you know, gain that competitive advantage when it comes to, like, deeper analytics stuff, especially around spin rate and pitching. Analytics and you know, it was an interesting time when I was there, because there were a lot of new philosophies that were being brought in. There are new philosophies not just on the pitching analytics, but also on the, you know, pitching rotation and how we're going to manage that, pitch counts, all these things. And so I felt like I was in with a lot of other guys, and we were kind of in a guinea pig era of development, baseball development. And it was really, really interesting. Obviously, the technology we had with the Astros was way beyond what we had in college. But even then, it was still early in the pitch, you know, in the pitch spin rate in the analytics era of baseball. And, you know, since I left and at the end of the 2017 season and then came back last year, even more has progressed. And so, you know, when I played last year with the Phillies in AAA, I was blown away as to kind of how much the game has evolved on that front. So when I was with the Astros, it was still very early in all that. And it's evolved a whole lot since then.
Dude, when you look at launch angles of where teams are changing entire philosophies, the Astros went to a heavily curveball related philosophy. They want to change the, you know, not just the left and right in the zone, but also changing eye levels as a pitcher. That from a philosophical standpoint, they have built an entire organization around philosophical changes there. Baseball with launch angles where strikeouts don't matter as much if you're going to alter the launch angle and try to hit home runs. It is truly amazing what StatCast and some of the stuff that some of the pitching tech that, you know, I know Trevor Bauer talks about a lot. The changes that technology have made to baseball over, as you mentioned, like really over the last 7-8 years, it's astounding how far technology has pushed baseball.
Yeah, and I mean, if you think about it, teams want to win more games. It's competitive advantage. So those that can figure out how to, you know, within the rules of baseball, try to maximize their chances of winning. And this just seems to be one of those things when you gather all the data. And I think that's really where we were. We didn't have the tools to gather the data. But in the early 2010s, teams were starting to gather that data. And by the mid-2010s, it's like, all right, we have all this data. How do we use it? And what's our philosophy in trying to win championships? And I think the Astros have done a great job. I think, obviously, the Dodgers and other organizations that are, you know, year in and year out in the playoffs and in the World Series hunt are the ones that have, I think, figured out that solution. And then it's a little bit of game theory going back and forth and trying to figure out, okay, we know the Astros are doing this. How do we, knowing that they are amazing at this, try to, counteract what they're doing and provide us a competitive advantage when we play against a team like the Astros? So it's really fascinating. I think it's really interesting for baseball.
You're 30 years old right now, and I know you try to make a comeback with Philadelphia. You did make a comeback in the Philadelphia organization. What's 2022 going to look like for you? I know there's we're in the middle of a lockout now. Are you done with baseball? Are you going to continue to give it a go this year? Where does it stand? And then that'll take us right into your minor leagues.
Yeah, no, this year is going to be my, you know, my make or break year. And I have a lot of peace about that. You know, I'm 30 years old. I've never made it to the big leagues. My career has gone like no one would have expected, especially myself. But I've come to peace with a lot of the things that have happened in my life, and especially in my baseball career. I still love the game. I think my body has been through the ringer a little bit through the years playing baseball, but I still love it, and I still want to play again this year. But like I said, it's probably my make or break year. I think based on the results of this year, I could be done this time next year. I could be gearing up for another spring training. But you know, minor league baseball is still happening regardless of the CBA. So we have a report date, and we're going to show up ready to play a season.
Well, so one of the reasons I brought you on is to talk about the minor league, your minor league experience. You had a long Twitter thread where you laid out the issues for minor league baseball players. Now, unless you've watched a segment of something or really paid attention to it, a lot of people wouldn't know how poor minor leaguers are. I mean, really dirt poor, and the difficulties they face. And you laid out three major issues, but you also had what you thought were some solutions as well, and this is what garnered so much attention. But you said the three major issues are housing, food, and off-season training. Talk for a second about those three issues and how difficult it can be for each one, because I hadn't even thought about some of the issues with housing, for example.
Yeah. So, you know, minor league baseball players, when they start out, they're making very little money. You know, I think $1,000, $1,200 a month. It's peanuts, right? And you're only playing 5 months a year. So when you're not being paid in the off season, you really have to make every dollar stretch. For a lot of, you know, Americans, you know, I put in my thread, by the time you're in AAA, you might be making up to $4,000, but it's probably a little less. But that, for a lot of Americans, that's a healthy amount of money. But you have, with minor league baseball players, you have a lot of other unique logistical issues that make it incredibly difficult to live, to eat, and to train in the off season on that salary. And so for example, housing, your options are really limited when it comes to housing. You know, if you think about it, you're in season for 5 months. Where are you going to stay? You either have you try to find a lease, like, you know, most people do, but then you have to furnish your house, you have to get the utilities, and you have to find a landlord who's willing to do it for only 5 months. But then what happens if you get traded, you get called up, you sent down, your name's attached to this lease, you're paying rent there, and you have to find housing in whatever new city you're in. And so there's just all these concerns that, you know, you look at the options, you're like, man, either I'm taking risk here by putting my name on a lease when I probably won't be there by the end of the year, or I'm taking a risk here by spending a lot of money getting a hotel every single, you know, every night that I'm, you know, in my home stadium. You know, I've opted for hotels, which is more expensive, but I'm very blessed to be able to afford that that route. And so you start looking at all this and you're like, man, when you look at the like legitimate logistical options, it's either going to take a lot of effort and energy and a lot of your capacity to make these things happen in a really economical way, which can take away from your focus on actually, you know, improving your performance and playing every night. And so, you know, my whole thesis and kind of what I was writing was, I actually think it's a competitive advantage for teams to invest in their minor league systems to remove the three largest stressors for minor league baseball players so that they can actually focus on the game. I think it's a bad thing when minor league ball players have to retire because they just can't afford to keep playing anymore.
And
when you have incredibly talented players that are hanging it up, it's like, I got a family, I got kids, I got, you know, bills to pay, and my family's going to come above baseball. Well, I think baseball needs to take a hard look at that and say, okay, are we leaving talent on the field when we aren't investing in the players that could be the future of our organization or at least be contributors in some way?
We're visiting with Mark Appel, who is the former first pick of the 2013 draft with the Houston Astros. Did not make it up to the bigs with the Astros. Has not made it up to the bigs, so he's gone through a level of adversity, but a unique perspective because you signed. Now, you know, this is Wikipedia, so it's usually 100% accurate. They say you signed for a $6.35 million signing bonus. So you had the ability to fade some of the expenses of minor league, you know, that you've talked about while watching other teammates really, really struggle with it. I'm curious about, and we could get into the way that food, and because the food is another issue. Do you cook? Do you buy? If you buy out, it's more expensive. You're certainly, if you go fast food, it's not in your best interest from a health and performance standpoint. But what are some your teammates? You talk about guys retiring early because they can't afford to play minor league baseball. My brother had a chance to be a graduate assistant in college football, but decided not to because he was already married and just couldn't afford that year of making no money. And what you're talking about is minor leaguers make no money for a long, long time. Are there guys, is there a time limit that you feel like maybe 3 or 4 years? And that's really, you know, if you, it's a crap or get off the pot situation where if you haven't really gone on the fast track to maybe get up to the bigs, that after 4 years, you just can't, it just doesn't make financial sense to keep doing it. Is that what you're talking about?
I think there's, for, I mean, that clock is different depending on the player, but yeah, there, I mean, it feels like there's an expiration date on your career. And the fact that there is because of money, seems like a loss for baseball. I mean, I just imagine the value that teams could extract from their players if they knew that they were financially secure while they were playing. Now, that doesn't mean that they deserve to be playing because they, you know, I think that the players that deserve to be playing are the ones that are performing the best, that are staying healthy, that are doing all the things they need to do to be on the field, right? And that's a privilege, you know, and that's not a right, or that's not something that, you know, should be given to players. Like that needs to be earned, right? But when it comes down to it, it's like, I would rather be told, you know, I'd rather have my career end, and I'm speaking for generally base, you know, minor league baseball players, I'd rather have my career end because I just wasn't good enough. Like I went toe to toe with the best and they beat me, rather than, hey, I need to survive and I need to take care of my family. And I just don't think that's good for baseball. And I actually think teams, major league organizations would have a competitive advantage investing in the minor league systems to keep the players on the field as long as possible.
Give us an example. Give us an example of how that can take place.
Oh, I mean, you've got a family. You know, I was playing with a guy this year. He was kind of an up and down guy. He was playing with us in AAA. Goal to make it to the big leagues, right? I don't know if he had made it yet or not. Anyways, he had his first kid. The Phillies wanted to bring in. They just weren't ecstatic about his play up until the halfway point this year. So they released him. He goes home with his family. He's like, I need to make money, right? There's not an opportunity right now, but I would love to keep playing baseball. But what he ended up doing was retiring. He's like, I got a kid. I got a wife. I need to go out and provide for my family, and I haven't been able to save enough money. You give him, the tools and resources that he might need to go out and actually just make baseball his full-time job, especially when he's in the off season or right when he gets released, he could be right back in the gym getting ready for, an opportunity. But he's like, I don't have any money saved up. I got to go do something else. And so, part of it is how much are you willing to bleed and sacrifice for this dream? And it definitely puts the onus of love and passion on the players. And I think that's, you definitely need love and passion to be successful. But it also, makes those guys that are incredibly talented think long and hard about whether it's worth it for them to keep going, even if they know that they could be successful if they have the resources to do so.
Mark Appel is our guest, former Astros minor leaguer, who is right now in the Phillies organization, giving it another shot, make or break year this year. Mark, I'm going to let you go. I appreciate you. I do like the fact that Major League Baseball has been, I guess, shamed, really. There's no other way to say it. I mean, he's been shamed into stepping up and trying to help a little bit, because the situation with minor league baseball play, $1,000 a month. I mean, you can get five guys together, and how in the hell are you going to afford to, even with your $1,000 a month, how in the hell are you going to afford? Somebody on Twitch said they worked at a minor league concession stand, and they would give all the leftover food to the players every game to help them out. So it's just hard to believe in this day and age, with the money that is made in a professional sports league, that there is not a standard that is a better standard than what minor league baseball players get.
Yeah, and I like I said all along, I think it's a competitive advantage for teams to do it. And I don't think it's a good optics. It's good optics for Major League Baseball, knowing that the future of the game is not being taken care of, in what most would consider an adequate way. These players, they play because they love the game for the longest time. No one's really complained. I obviously have nothing to complain about in that sense, but I've seen it all firsthand. So I figured, and I might as well say something. I'm looking at it from the owner's perspective. I think owners would actually benefit greatly from implementing some of these solutions. And I don't think my solutions are the exact solutions that will be implemented or anything like that, but I figured, why not get the conversation started and get people talking about it? And, it seemed to garner a lot of interest. And it was kind of fun getting to interact with fans and other players, on Twitter.
That's Mark Appel. You can find him on Twitter if you'd like to, talk more, or just follow his journey. Mark Appel, MarkAppel, 26. That's his Twitter account. Mark, listen, we wish you the best of luck. Sorry it didn't work out here in Houston, but certainly would love to. It'd be a great story if you came out of camp and made it up to the league at some point this year before you shut down a career. Hopefully the career gets jump started this year with Philadelphia. So we'll be following you.
I appreciate that, Lance, and for all my Houston people, I live in Houston in the off season, and so
oh, nice.
Houston's always been home. yeah, Houston's always been home. That's where I was kind of born and raised, and I love it here. And so really, really proud of what the Astros have done, you know, and the success that they've had, especially seeing guys like Lance.
So you were happy at 17? Like, be real. You were happy in 17 and not like part of you is like, I kind of wish they didn't win.
17 was strange for me because yeah. I was sitting at my house in the Heights and, you know, watching the World Series and they were, you know, just playing a few miles downtown. You know, and it was a lot of these guys that I like came up through the minors with. So it was like yeah. bittersweet in a way that I was excited for my friends and I was excited for the city of Houston. But yeah, a little bit of me was like, man, I wish I could have been there. But you know, things work out exactly the way they should. I truly believe that, and you know, I have no regrets, and I have nothing to complain about.
Yeah, well, we'll get you in here to talk some baseball sometime, but that's when your career is over. So go get it done this year with Phil in the Phillies farm system, and when you're done, we'll get you in studio and come talk some ball with us, or even if it's during the off season.
I love that, Lance. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Mark. That's Mark Appel. Thanks to Mark for joining us today. It's it's interesting when you watch when you go check up on the minor league system, when you find out how it works. It's terrible. Now, speaking of minor league systems, Major League Baseball has a minor league system that feeds their entire, it's built. Major League Baseball is built around the minor leagues, right? It's necessary seasoning. In basketball, the G Leagues have become a bigger and bigger part of basketball. The top players don't typically play in the G League very often. If they do, something's gone wrong, or maybe it's a rehab stint. But it's something that is beginning to help the NBA. And joining us at 9 o'clock is going to be Mark Ross, who's Executive Vice President of the XFL. He formerly was a personnel executive with the New York Giants. The XFL and the NFL have partnered up, and we're going to talk to Mark about what that's going to mean for both the XFL when they come back in 2023 and the NFL, because this is finally what needed to happen was a minor league system developed. We don't know. This is not really set up to be a true minor league system in football yet, but it's going to be the breeding grounds for a lot of things the NFL wants to check out that they really can't do in real time in their own league. So really interesting stuff going on for the NFL with the combination, with their partnership, collaboration with the XFL. I want to tell you about a collaboration I had with Texas Custom Patios. Somebody intimated like, oh yeah, you're sitting out there on your free patio and you got free patio. I paid full price for that, sucker. I'm the one who brought Stephen Schell onto radio, and I'm like, dude, your product is unbelievable. And look, he's a guy who is very what's the word for it? Let's just say he really wants to make sure everything is right, okay? And that's the thing that my wife loves, and that's why we love the process, is if anything is not right, he jumps on it and makes sure that it's right. It's their expense, too, by the way. When they quote you a price, that's the price you pay. If anything needs to be changed, altered, redone, that's a price that comes out of, you know, an expense that comes out of their pocket, because they believe in giving you one price and saying this is the price. Now, if you want to add something on in the middle of your process, windows, siding, you want to add a kitchen, you say, you know what, let's do it with the kitchen. They'll do that as well. But the best thing is to get exactly what you want right up front, and they will help you finance it. And then what you're going to have is, frankly, a backyard oasis. The way that it looks, the way that it feels, the way that it lives, your opportunity to spend time with friends and family members or by yourself outside in your own outdoor space or at your kitchen or entertaining guests, it is second to none. You're going to absolutely love it. Go see the work that they've done before and after. You'll find a house that looks like yours, and you're going to find what it becomes when you go to TexasCustomPatios.com. Make sure you follow them also on Instagram for all their great work. TexasCustomPatios.com. Get low when the whistle goes. Real
fun. Get low when the whistle goes. Sports. ESPN 97.5. Welcome back to The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, let's go. It's 8:30 right here on a Wednesday morning. John Granato is out for the rest of the week. Dell is going to join me Thursday, Friday. Bun B in studio on Friday to co-host Brandon Caldwell, who now works with ESPN, but longtime sports and music writer here in Houston, is going to join us tomorrow. Right now, we're bringing in a guy who I just found. I didn't know about this guy, and then I listened to him, and I thought, this guy's really good at what he does, and on a really interesting topic. I want to bring him onto the show. He's a six-syllable name guy, so that's how you know he's fancy. Carrington Harrison, a sports talk host from 610 Sports Radio in Kansas City, joins us right now. What's going on, Carrington? How are we doing, man?
Hey, good morning. I'm doing good. You got Bun D coming in studio. I just would hand in my resignation letter. I don't know if you could do better radio than
you
that
can.
After you get done interviewing Bun D.
If I could have Bun, you ought to get him on your show sometime. He is unbelievable on a number of topics. A huge cinephile. Like, when it comes to movies, nobody is up on the history. He's got Criterion Collection. Like, Bun is a legit movie and music guy. And I mean, across the spectrum, one of the most interesting guys you could talk to. So listen, I want to talk about some of the stuff going on in Kansas City, because I wanted to get you on actually last week when I heard you talk about the, it was about the, Eric Bieniemy situation going on. And there was just to catch people up to speed, you probably don't realize this. There was a website, of Chiefs fans, I guess, for lack of a better, well, you know what, why am I doing it? Why don't you tell everyone what it was that got Kansas City buzzing so much about Eric Bieniemy and his relationship with the Kansas City Chiefs, and where it came from?
So there's a popular Chiefs Twitter fan account, and they actually did something a couple of years ago whenever Tyreek Hill was in the middle of his ongoing legal issues. And last week they posted a pretty lengthy read regarding some of the issues and the inner workings of the Chiefs between Andy Reid, Mike Kafka, who was the quarterback coach, who's now the offensive coordinator for the New York Giants, Eric Bieniemy, and Patrick Mahomes. And it was pretty explosive, but I think the funny part about this conversation is it was really a one-day story in Kansas City. So the day that you and I first talked, it was obviously a really big deal in Kansas City. It went viral. Everybody was talking about it. The site actually removed the story from their website the next day and issued, I don't want to call it a retraction, but it felt like an apology / retraction, and then the story just kind of went away. Like, it hasn't really come up. It hasn't really been a big deal in Kansas City the last couple of days, and the focus has turned to what are they going to do with Tyrann Mathieu and what are they going to do with Orlando Brown, who everybody thinks is going to get the franchise tag, but the story within itself, it died after about 24 hours.
That's so strange to me because, and look, I've been around this business for a long time. I've broken some different stories. Sometimes you get it right. I broke a story with some information I had on a contract for, oh my gosh, went to the Kansas City Chiefs, a defensive tackle who played with the Titans. I'll remember here in a second. But I broke the contract. It was before free agency even started, and Pro Football Talk picked it up, and it became a really, really big deal. And this is before Twitter, and it became a really big deal. And the heat that you get from people who give you sources, I mean, your sources who give you the information, it is a real thing. So even if that information in there was correct, or elements of it was correct, the heat that comes with it when people realize it goes viral is a whole different thing that happens behind the scenes. What I am curious about, though, Carrington, is why was it a one-day story when Eric Bieniemy, who's been one of the most talked-about offensive coordinators in the game, we still don't even know if he's going to have a contract with the Kansas City Chiefs. How is that a one-day story when that's still out there hanging over Kansas City?
That part of it has still remained a story, and we still don't have a clear sort of resolution to the Eric Bieniemy situation. I think it became a one-day story because so they quickly backed away from the story. So you read it initially. If you went back and read it the next morning, there were four editor's notes clearing up things in the story. Well, hold on. If you were 100% spot on and accurate with your reporting the first time, you can't then come back and have four amendments. And then they deleted it the next morning. So it wasn't even up for a full 24 hours. And I sort of felt, I believe in most stories, there's a hint of truth, right? Like, there is a mustard seed of truth, and I felt like the story just went in so many different directions that if you can pull the thread at three or four things, then the entire house of cards falls down. And I think a lot of other people came to a very similar conclusion regarding the story. But to your point about Eric Bieniemy, I mean, that's been a major talking point here. One of my big messages for the Chiefs this year has just been new and fresh. When the Chiefs started this journey a few years ago after the loss to the AFC Championship game, I mean, since then, in my opinion, they've been the best team in the NFL. They've been to two Super Bowls, and they went to the AFC Championship game this year and lost. But the AFC is just drastically different than when the Chiefs started that journey. Buffalo's a better team than when they started. Cincinnati's a better team. Los Angeles is a better team. So I just think the rest of the AFC is starting to catch up, and the Chiefs have remained largely the same for the last three seasons. It's just time to get some new, fresh, innovative ideas, and sometimes that means you got to make very difficult decisions. I wouldn't bring Eric Bieniemy back. I think he's hit his ceiling as what he can accomplish as the offensive coordinator of the Chiefs. If it's his goal to be a head coach in the league, he will not do that being the offensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs.
No, and that's what I agree with you. And I feel like you got to get out from Andy's shadow and reestablish yourself. And I don't even think going to college is necessarily a bad move, because if you really want to get back to the pros, if you show yourself, we saw this with Mel Tucker, if you have one big year, you become coveted. So I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. I think it may be now how much of that is pushing, you know, Eric Bieniemy making his decision, how much Kansas City pushing him out of the nest? How much is it that he's just run his course? Do you think there is any chance that he's never gotten a head coaching job despite a ton of interviews? You think there's any chance that that some of the stuff that they had in there about him maybe not getting along with Mike Kafka and Pat Mahomes to an extent, or having some issues there, that there was some truth to that? Because that's one of the things that you said, yeah, I could see that potentially being accurate.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, I think, you know, our profession is similar in this way. Like, we creatively collaborate with a bunch of people, and if people heard all the conversations you've ever had with your co-hosts or producers, they might be like, man, this guy's difficult to work with. He's tough to work with.
Right.
So that part to me just wasn't that outlandish and far-fetched to believe that sometimes he's not collaborative, sometimes he's combative in these conversations. That part to me made a lot of sense. I think you and I agree with this part regarding Eric Bieniemy. I think the perception regarding Bieniemy is that, well, it's Andy's offense, it's Patrick Mahomes, and we can't give the offensive coordinator a lot of credit. And that's why I say he's just hit a ceiling where he's going to have to go somewhere and find his Ryan Tannehill the same way that Arthur Smith did, or find his Josh Allen, where Brian Daboll wasn't an offensive coordinator that a lot of people knew. You coached up Josh Allen in two seasons, you got the Giants job. I just think that Patrick Mahomes has gotten so great and Reed gets so much of the credit for it that people just don't see maybe the behind-the-scenes work that Eric Bieniemy has sort of put into Patrick Mahomes. So you just got to start over. It might be fair or unfair, but I think that's the perception sort of circling Bieniemy around the league.
All right, look, I'm going to ask you a question. You can be as diplomatic as you want. I'm not trying to blow up your spot at all. I promise you, I recognize the situation. I recognize what you have to deal with here, there in Kansas City. That's your home spot. But on the outside looking in, we all see the Jackson Mahomes and the Brittany Matthews, I think it is, Pat's fiance, and of course the mother of his child. We all see what's gone on with them, the drama with Jackson in that restaurant, and what people have said about him and Brittany. How much of a is that overblown, or do you feel like that is a distraction for Chiefs fans and maybe even for the Chiefs organization? What goes on with those two relative to Pat Mahomes?
It's interesting, because I would say, not to dance out of your answer, I would say it's a 50-50. I would say that there's half the Chiefs fan base that are on the leave her alone, why do you keep bothering them? And then there's the fan base that thinks they're a problem and a distraction. I just don't really care about this. Like, to me, sports are interesting enough, and there's enough storylines inside the actual game that I just don't care about your TikToking brother. Like, he just doesn't, like, Jackson's not catching touchdowns. He's not running routes. He's not blocking for anybody. I just don't care. So as long as they're not bothering anybody, I just leave them alone. I try to follow a very simple message. I don't spend my free time worrying about what other people do in their free time. So I may be the worst person to ask this to, because I just don't care about Jackson or Brittany. They can do whatever they want to do, but it's definitely been a very polarizing thing. And what I think is, I think why that story caught on and why it went so viral is, I think everyone is trying to explain what happened the second half to the Kansas City Chiefs. That's the worst Patrick Mahomes has played, and it seems so uncharacteristic based on how he's played most of his career. But I think everybody's trying to latch on to, well, this is why they lost in the second half, And I think that story gained so much life because it was the juiciest, well, this is why they lost answer for the AFC Championship game. And I think Chiefs fans have really struggled with this very simple sentence. The Bengals just might be better than Kansas City. Like, they won in Cincinnati. They won in Kansas City. Out of the 10 second half and overtime possessions that Kansas City had against Cincinnati this year, they scored 6 points. At some point, you got to give Cincinnati some credit for what they were able to do against the Chiefs. The Chiefs fans just ain't hearing it.
At C.Harrison is how you can find him on Twitter. Good follow and good sports talk host. I've listened to a couple of your stuff. I really enjoy it. Really enjoyed listening to you guys or listening to you break down the Chiefs. I consider Ryan Poles a friend. I was very happy to see him get that GM job at California and with the Bears. But it's certainly you made the Chiefs. He made the Chiefs a weaker front office by leaving because he is really, really talented. So that will be interesting to see how he does with the Bears. Listen, Carrington, I appreciate your time. Carrington Harrison, once again, you can follow him on Twitter at C.Harrison. He hosts the Afternoon Drive show in Kansas City at 610 Sports Radio. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. I appreciate it, man.
Hey, Lance, I appreciate you having me on, man. Thank you.
You got it. You got it. Coming up next, the Big Puma. He of HBU baseball fame, and he's a graybeard now, which is a little different look for him. We'll talk to the Big Puma. You've got Big Puma with HBU and Jose Cruz Jr. at 9:30 with Rice Baseball. We should have some fun stories there. Right now, I got a fun story about homeowners insurance. And typically you say that's not a fun story, but it is whenever I was able to put $783 back into my pocket. I got a return check. I had, this was 3 years ago. I had spent money on my homeowners insurance. I prepaid it so I could get a discount. And then I went through this same process I tell you to do. Text the word money to 232323. And what happened was, I got, you know, they text back, what's your address? I give it to them. Within 15 seconds, it was actually less than that. I had a firm quote on homeowners insurance. Then I got an email. I responded, went back and forth. I got an email that showed me some different options. And what I got basically was A-rated insurance, but I got it for a discounted rate. So what I did was I contacted my homeowners insurance, canceled with them. I signed up with the other company, and then I got a prorated check back for the amount that I just told you. Because that's what I had coming back to me that I hadn't even spent. And I just re-signed up with them 1 month prior. So the average savings ends up being around $900. So if you continue to stay with the same company over and over, you don't get competitive rates. Get competitive rates. TGSinsurance.com or text the word money right now to 232323.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Hall of Fame, Billy Sims. And you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You found the Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
No, it's Lance Zierlein. That booze pig's out of town. And that's not me. That's Lance Berkman first gave John the name booze pig. So it's only fair that John and I helped dub him Big Puma. Although the truth is, Lance called himself a puma. I just threw big in there because Shaquille O'Neal was calling everybody the big Aristotle, the big this, the big that. So that's how that all got started. But joining us right now is the manager for the HBU Huskies, and they take on Rice tonight. Jose Cruz Jr. is going to join us later on. And the first question I have for you, Lance, is this a revenge game? I know you would have loved to have had a Rice baseball manager job. You were a roommate with Jose Cruz Jr. the 1 year you guys were together at Rice. Do you consider this a huge revenge game? Are you bringing the full guns? Are you not going to let it? If it's 20-1 and you're pounding Rice, are you going to just keep pedal to the metal?
Well, if it's 20-1, I'd be very pleased with that outcome, not because it's Rice, but just because we could get a win. I mean, we're kind of scuffling right now. And so, I mean, at this point, we're not worried about who we're playing. We're worried about playing well ourselves. So, you know, it'll be fun. Jose and I are friends, and we have a great relationship. And you know, I don't have any ill will towards him or the Rice baseball program. It's just
you know, two teams going at it. And I really and truly, and say this with all my heart, I just hope we play a good baseball game, and whatever the outcome is, I can live with it.
You know what? Congratulations to Craig Biggio for getting to you with the cliches. Unbelievable. The big Puma is all, you sound like a manager now. Now you sound like a leader of a team.
Well, that's what you got to do. You got to do what you got to do, Lance.
You do. I'm curious, when did you decide you wanted to be a manager? I know this has been going on actually for a while, but was it during your playing days where you thought, you know what I'd like to do? Stick around baseball for as long as possible.
Well, I can't say that I guess the short answer is yes. I mean, towards the end of my career, especially when I wasn't playing as well as I had in the past, I really enjoyed helping the young players, you know, come to the field every day and trying to, you know, pass along the things that I'd learned in the game to them. So I felt like coaching would be a natural outlet for that. Like you had mentioned, initially I thought Rice would be a good landing spot because I'd played there and had a good relationship with Coach Graham. And actually when I was going back to school to finish my degree, I helped out as a student assistant coach, and I really enjoyed it. Loved the college environment. Feel like that's a place where you can have a big impact on guys, not only baseball wise, but really more importantly with their lives. So something that I have wanted to do, and now it's great to get an opportunity to do that.
I think that's the dirty little secret is my dad spent his entire career coaching, like half in college football, half in pro football. Enjoyed college football substantially more. And it didn't have to be at the biggest schools either. Just the ability to help teach and coach technique and work with young, like he just found it to be a much more enjoyable experience. You played the game at a professional level. Obviously the pay is way different. Do you find some of that same thing? Cause you just mentioned the college experience. Do you find that is that romanticized or is that real, where a lot of people just enjoy their time from the collegiate days, just maybe a little more?
Yeah, I think there's no question, at least for me, and I can only speak for me, but I enjoyed my college baseball experience way more than my professional baseball experience. And, you know, there's a number of reasons for that. You really develop, you're at a time in your life when you have limited responsibilities. Most guys are not married. They don't have kids. So you really are with your teammates. It feels like 24/7. So you develop an extremely tight bond with the guys that you're playing with. You don't have one of the problems with professional baseball is that there is an element of selfishness that's sort of built in. You have to, you're your own franchise. I mean, these players, and I don't blame the players. It's what they do for a living. It's their business. And so when you have a 25-man roster, you really have 25 individual franchises that are coming together, you know, to try to do something as a group. But in college, you're truly a team, and you're 100% playing for the name that's on the front of the jersey, not the name on the back. You don't have that same, element of it's a business hanging over you on a daily basis. So that adds a tremendous amount to the environment. The number of games that you play makes it for exciting. You know, every game's important. You play 56 games. In order to get an at-large bid to a regional, you know, you need to win close to 40 of them, and that's kind of the magic number. And so, you know, you have to win two-thirds of your games, which puts a lot of heat on every individual game, which is not the case in pro ball. You know, you're running out there, and a lot of times if you're playing the Pirates on a Tuesday night, you don't know whether you're coming or going. The game, you know, 98 or 99, it doesn't have the same pizzazz. So college baseball for me is so much more fun than my playing experience at the big league level.
So, you know, I'm interested. So the game, by the way, you guys play Rice tonight. That game is going on tonight. It's going to be on ESPN Plus. So if you have ESPN Plus, you can watch it.
Yeah, it's at 2:00. It's an afternoon game. So 2:00 at Houston Baptist.
Do you have a cool name like the Doghouse or the Kennel? Like, what is y'all's home park called?
Yeah. I don't know. The kids might call it something, but I am not aware of what we call it. I just call it our field, you know, and we don't have lights, so we have to play games in the afternoon. It's kind of like old school Wrigley, but anyway, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, you had a good career. You can kick in a little something for the lights. Man.
Yeah, well, we definitely need some things kicked in for a lot of different things, and that's one of them.
It's all Wrigley baseball, daytime baseball. Well, that's cool. It's still going to be on ESPN Plus if you guys want to watch listen, you're not going to work. You're going to be at your office doing nothing. Turn on ESPN Plus, watch Lance Berkman versus Jose Cruz Jr., watch HBU versus Rice, 2 o'clock at HBU, or go out to the game. Go out there and grab some tickets and go watch some baseball. Should be a nice day today. So is there anything new school from an analytics standpoint that you're doing managerially, something that you maybe looked down upon when you were a player and that you've kind of come around on?
No, you know, there's a big difference. And I'm not saying that the analytics are not helpful in some respects, but, you know, we actually had this discussion the other day. I think there's a couple of reasons that analytics are limited in their usefulness at the college level. Number one is, you know, at this age, you still have a group of players that may or may not even be able to execute the basic skills of the game. So, you know, who cares what a spin rate is if you can't throw strikes? And the reason that, that information is helpful at the big league level is because all those guys, for the most part, can throw strikes because they've gotten to the big leagues. And so by that time, you know, they've been weeded out. So you can have all of the fancy equipment and all of the metrics, but at the end of the day, if you can't execute a basic skill of the game, all that information doesn't do you any good. And the second reason is that there is limited information on the opposition. So, you know, there's not as many college games. You don't have the long history of at bats to draw upon for information like you do at the major league level. So that makes some of the information a little less reliable. But we do, you know, we use scouting reports and we see where guys tend to hit the ball.
We super shifting at HBU?
It just depends on who's hitting. I mean, if you see a guy that really never hits the ball on the ground the other way, then yeah, we'll put another guy on the other side of second base. But you know, I think teams like Houston use that as standard positioning and go from there. We, you know, in the college game, you're also much more likely to get guys that are willing to bunt, that are willing to try to hit the ball the other way. And so the shift is much less effective because people are willing to do what it takes to beat it.
Such a strange concept. The ability to take what's given and just say, well, we'll just keep doing this until you switch what you're doing. It seems to be a very common sense approach.
Yeah, well, but I mean, you know, the other thing too, you got to remember, that's what I'm talking about earlier when I say that the pay scale, I mean, guys don't get paid to hit the ball the other way on the ground, you know, like they get paid to hit homers. And so you can't blame the players for quote unquote not making an adjustment because the financial part of the game is set up to reward them for not doing that. But in college, you know, if you're not willing to do what the coach asks you to, you're not going to play. And so that's, you know, it's a totally different game in a lot of respects in terms of the strategy and all of that. So, and I know at the major league level, a bunt is not considered to be a great play because the defense is so good. And if you bunt at the big league level, you're giving up an out. But at the college level, that's not necessarily true. You know, the defense isn't as reliable. So a bunt makes more sense because you're putting pressure on the other team to have to make a play. And in college, they don't always make the plays like they do at the major league level. So there's a variety of differences that make the strategy in the game. You know, college baseball to me is really more like 1950s and 60s era baseball used to be at the big league level, where there's still a lot of strategy. There's, you know, there's bunting, there's stealing, there's, you know, things that you have to defend that you just don't. They kind of all but disappeared from the major league game.
That's Lance Berkman. He's formerly known as the Big Puma, the sassiest center fielder this city has ever seen. And
that's
now
right.
He is a manager of the HBU Huskies, and they take on Rice today, 2 o'clock out at HBU's field. We're calling it the Kennel. And
there you go.
No, there's no lights there, so get out there and enjoy some day baseball. Get your kids to skip school and go watch HBU baseball. Jose Cruz Jr. will be out there. Lance Berkman will be out there managing their two teams. Cruz Jr. will join us at 9:30 to talk a little bit. Lance, thanks for taking the time on a game day to catch up, man. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Lance.
That's going to do it for Lance Berkman. Coming up next, Mark Ross, Executive Vice President of the XFL. They are collabing with the NFL, and this is a really big deal, and we'll tell you why when we come back right here on The Bench.
You are listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.